Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Joined by my colleague and co-host and friend, Thaddeus McCotter, writing at American Greatness. And we're very pleased, given the fog of war, to welcome our colleague Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, to characterize what we know in the fog. U.S., Iran, Israel, the Gulf, many, many battlefronts being reignited, or ignited for the first time ever. I'm thinking of Qatar. However, home team first. Thaddeus, you have a question for Malcolm. Good evening.
Good evening. Malcolm, we've seen the U.S. issue warnings, and some of them are rather dire and some of them are rather novel. Can you tell us about them?
Yes, sir. It's good to be with both of you on these very eventful days. Things we have talked about for years, anticipating coming to this head as it is. The very interesting bulletin that came from the National Terrorism Advisory System of the Department of Homeland Security gives a summary of threats to the United States and saying that the conflict has raised the threat environment, and ranging from low-level cyber attacks against U.S. networks by pro-Iranian activists, as they call them, and cyber actors affiliated with the Iranian government may try to hit U.S. networks, but also a longstanding commitment to target U.S. officials it views as responsible for the death of Soleimani, the Iranian military commander, in January of 2020. And so they're saying that the likelihood of violent extremists in the U.S. independently mobilizing for violence in response to the events, and the leadership issuing a religious ruling, fatwa, calling for retaliatory violence against targets in the homeland, so that they could anticipate that such events motivated by everything from anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, anti-American motivations could contribute to U.S.-based individuals plotting. They talk about the Iranian government publicly condemned U.S. involvement in the conflict. U.S. law enforcement has disrupted multiple potentially lethal Iranian-backed plots since 2020. The Iranian government has also tried to target critics of its regime who are based here in the United States. As you know, even the attacks on the president and others have been attributed to them. And seeing that the foreign terrorist organizations, including Hamas and Hezbollah and the others, that they've seen the releases by them and the motivation of some of them calling for violence against U.S. assets and personnel in the Middle East, but also here at home. So they are issuing this warning and telling people to take protective steps, including to listen to local authorities and the Nationwide Suspicious Activity Reporting Initiative. And if you see something, say something, being as important as ever today.
Malcolm, a detail about the Homeland Security warning. You routinely, as part of your work at the conference, look at security arrangements for Jewish institutions. I'm thinking of synagogues and schools across the United States. Have you seen anything like this warning from Homeland Defense before? And does this support or rededicate your security measures that you've taken in previous incidents of anti-Semitic conduct?
Well, we've taken the threat seriously, as you know, for a while, and we've discussed it here on air. But for several years, we have finally gotten people and institutions to take seriously the security threat aimed at Jewish organizations per se, as the rise of anti-Semitism, which has become very self-evident and resulted in physical assaults against individuals and institutions. But this warning certainly has raised the level of concern, and we are seeing not only cities and state police assigning more personnel to religious institutions and schools and other bodies that are identified, but also by the institutions themselves instituting stricter entry requirements in the hope of forestalling an attack. I mean, it's all deterrence, really, in the hope that they'll attack some other weaker target than yours. But it's definitely increased the awareness. I find people more aware than ever about the need for dedicating funds and for the federal government also to aid the institutions that can't afford to take the least the minimal steps of cameras, et cetera, to protect the people visiting there.
Tehran, on the cover of the online site of Times of Israel, there is a panoramic shot of the city of Tehran, which is a megacity, and rush hour traffic proceeding accordingly on the roadways. But in the distance, not too far, are debris clouds billowing up from missile or bomb strikes by what we believe is the IAF. One of those targets was the Evin prison, which is infamous, to say the least, notorious, to say the least. It's a horror place of torture and persecution and disappearance for many years. The Times of Israel explains that Evin prison was attacked because in the hope of a jailbreak. But in any event, all of Tehran has to be transfixed by those billowing clouds all across the city. It wasn't just Evin prison. It was everywhere. As you look, these clouds are coming up from airstrikes. So there is right now an ongoing campaign against Iran. However, Malcolm, I ask what else is going on, because I believe the Prime Minister, Mr. Netanyahu, has indicated that they're near completing their mission against Iran. So what do we know about the strikes today?
But I think the Prime Minister, which you rightly quote, was really referring to meeting many of the objectives. But I think the message was also that after the American strike, which was preceded by Israeli aircraft at the request of the United States, they went in first and took care of a lot of the anti-aircraft missile fire or whatever might have been launched against the American planes. 125 participated in the U.S. assault on the three nuclear sites. So Israel is saying that this is an important step, but nobody knows yet today how much damage was really done. Did we put it out of permanent functioning, or is it just an interim? Some officials have said we set them back 3 years. Others have said much more. So the dust has to settle a lot more till we know exactly how far we've come. And Israel is today hitting strike sites, not only Evin prison, which I think symbolically is very significant, but also the headquarters of the intelligence, many other key sites that takes away the command and control, as well as storage sites for missiles, which continue to rain down on Israel, doing a lot of damage today again. And they aim specifically at civilian targets, where Israel hits exclusively military targets. And the damage in Israel has mounted to huge amounts. People don't realize how much is really involved, and there have been injuries, et cetera. So Israel took out the top 20 commanders. They've taken out the leading people involved in the nuclear program. And all of those things have to be measured to see what is the impact. Can they be replaced? Can they send them back? So when we talk about how far this has yet to go, I think we're talking about certainly a couple more weeks. If there's time, originally this had been anticipated to be longer. They didn't think it would go as quickly as it has. But I think it's really remarkable. And we learn now that they've been planning this since October 24, and that the anticipating that the deadline was running out, because they know that Iran was building tens of thousands of these rockets that they've been pouring down in Israel. Now they pour hundreds, even into a couple thousand. But their goal was to have tens of thousands of them. And that would have been unbearable, what the damage that that would have done. And also because they were days away from completing a nuclear cycle, certainly the enrichment of the uranium way beyond the limits they're supposed to have. A lot of these debates are sideshows to the reality of how far Iran has progressed and could have a nuclear weapon in a short period of time.
Malcolm, those tunnels, they're very good. They were built by the North Koreans. Is there any confidence that they know where all the tunnels are, where they could keep either the missiles or the ore?
No, I don't think that they know, think they know where all of them are. They know where many of them are, and they have been taking them out systematically. As you remember in Gaza, where the whole country, the whole area was built on top of tunnels now, or tunnels dug underneath the entire area. Here in mountains, deep into mountain ranges and far underground. So we don't even know if the bunker buster bombs are able to actually hit all of the stored material. So again, those are the kind of things that we will need time to be able to measure. But when they hit the headquarters of the missile headquarters, it was 1,400 miles away today. That's the furthest Israel had to strike. And there you can measure the destruction because of the explosions and what took place. They were not anticipating it. And now, of course, we're seeing escalation in other areas, which will require an international response, I think, certainly when we talk about the Gulf.
That is, you have a question.
Well, then let's talk about the Gulf, Malcolm. What's been your assessment of the reaction there?
This is fog of war completely. The reports are just coming in. Go ahead, Malcolm.
Right. So there are two parts to this. One is that the attacks that are happening now, as we are speaking today, there have been all sorts of UAE closed its airspace, Bahrain closed its airspace, supposedly some rockets fired at them, but certainly rockets fired at the U.S. base in Qatar. The Iraqis, a missile at least one, maybe more, targeting our bases in Iraq. Bahrain reported the same. So we're seeing that they are moving into attack across the board, as they said that they would. And still the threat is that they will take the next step, which is to close the Straits of Tehran. And what's interesting is the Chinese came out today and warned them against doing it, saying that this is a vital international war corridor because they're dependent on it also for the oil supplies, the oil they buy from Iran. And Russia as well has expressed a very mild feeling, both of them. Today, of course, the foreign minister of Iran is in Moscow and meeting with Putin. But Putin said clearly, our deal with you did not include a mutual defense pact, and says, you know, there are a million Russian-speaking Jews in Israel. These are my people as well. It clearly trying to say, I'm staying out of this part of it, and they're very unhappy about that. More importantly to me, or symbolically at least, is the remarks, the muted response of the Gulf states, of Egypt, of Jordan, Morocco, others, who will give pro forma statements, you know, being critical, but in fact recognize that this is their security that's being saved, that they are targets as well. And the information that came out of the files that were captured by Israel make it very clear that they wanted to sabotage the Abraham Accords, they wanted to sabotage all of the neighbors, and that their design is on the region, not only on Israel, is the obstacle to them exercising those designs on the entire region that the Ayatollah and his people have. It's a cataclysmic view and very damaging. So I think that is part of the reason why you've seen the notable absence of strong reactions or any kind of a mobilization. If anything, they're cheering privately and telling Israel to finish the job.
Malcolm Hohenlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, Thaddeus McCotter, my co-host. When we come back, regional reaction, and we begin with Syria. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.